KALW.
People want to work. Human beings want to work. People in here want to work. They just don't want to be exploited.
In California prisons, people have to work. Jobs in the kitchen or cleaning up on the yard or stacking milk crates in a factory.
Sometimes you only get a measly 8 cents an hour. Sometimes you don't get anything at all. And that leaves you with nothing.
And the implications are complicated.
So when you go back to society, you have a disadvantage in the things that are available to you. But yet you're spending all these years in prison using your labor, and that labor is not being used to help prepare you for the society you're going back to.
Real jobs and prison pay. It's a new episode from Uncuffed. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're bringing you the latest episode from Uncuffed. In this one, the producers get into a topic that affects basically every single person that comes into prison: involuntary servitude. According to the Constitution, incarcerated people are legally required to work while doing their time, even if they don't want to. Some of those jobs may be more appealing than others. You could be assigned to work in the chapel or in a program like the Uncuffed podcast. But no matter the job, the rates are set by law. And here in California, the best paying job will get you about $1 an hour. Most jobs pay even less than that, down to 8 cents an hour. In this excerpt from Uncuffed, we'll hear about prison jobs, what they pay, and how this all plays into involuntary servitude. Here's producer Jay Evans with a tour of jobs at Solano State Prison.
We went out to talk to some other folks about their jobs here at Solano. There's jobs in everything from bookbinding to fiber optics to laundry to welding. First up, we have Isaac Flores, who works in healthcare facility maintenance. He does custodial work in the medical clinic at Solano, where the guys go for their appointments. That means he's emptying trash and wiping scuff marks off the floors. It also means he has to follow particular procedures to sanitize and sterilize rooms too, cleaning up blood spills and things like that. It's a pretty serious work assignment. Here's Isaac.
This job here, if you get certified, is a good takeout to the streets because you could work in a hospital. You know, you're working with all the chemicals. You can get a job in a hospital or crime scenes, cleaning up crime scene areas. You want to stay away from people and be to yourself and just clean up crime scenes once they're done with their investigation. But this is right here, chemicals, like 64. You got to know how much to put in there. Because like, this is a little strong right here. SaniGuard is so clear that you can't tell. You could pour a gang of it in there and you won't know if it's strong or not until you use the power, the strip to see. So you're working with the chemicals, knowing how much chemicals to add to the water. But you need to know, because if you use it too strong, you could end up hurting yourself. Because if you get it on your hands, you know, it's chemicals. You know, some people it gives them rash. Some people, if you have cuts on your fingers, it could mess up your hands. But you need to know the right solutions. Same thing with the blood draws, because especially if you're working in the ER room, you got to clean that. You know, you got patients coming in off the streets, some gunshots, stab wounds, people are fighting. You got to know how to clean all that up.
Next up, we'll meet Mike Thomas, a clerk and a tutor in the education center. He helps set up materials for classes and tutors incarcerated students taking algebra for their GEDs.
My current job, it's encouraging. I like it. I'm around the right people. Sometimes things don't always go our way or my way. But for the most part, I have a good supervisor.
How much do you get paid on your current job?
It's nothing over $15 a month.
It's nothing over $15 or 15 cents?
$15 a month.
Thanks, Mike. Last, but certainly not least, we have Robert McCormick, who works as the lead man for the canteen on Sea Yard. There are four different canteens, and each one serves a different yard at the prison. The canteens are basically stores where the guys here can purchase food and hygiene items with money that loved ones send in, or from the very small earnings they make from their jobs. Most guys here don't feel like we get enough to eat with the meals the prison serves out every day. So the canteen is vital for us. Here's Robert.
If there's 1,200 people on the yard, I would say a third of them don't have money to shop. So we're doing about 900 people in three draws. We can do just under 80 people per day. I know what the guys are going to need before they need it. I pay attention. I used to do what they do. So now I know exactly what product we're going to run out of before it actually runs out of. We go through 2 pallets of rice per draw. And a pallet of rice consists of 56 boxes with 48 bags of rice. So you do the math. That's a lot of rice. The other day at dinner time, I counted 3 bites of beans. And, you know, I'm a 200-pound man. 3 bites of beans is not enough to even make a fart. I'm what they call the lead man in there. I'm number one of 4 people on our side. And my pay number is 22 cents. And then the institution takes half of that after taxes. I make about $950 a month.
And that's because of restitution, right?
Yeah, restitution, yep.
Fines, court fees, whatever your people send in here, they take 50% of that.
That's correct.
Thanks again to Mike Thomas, Isaac Flores, and Robert McCormick for sharing their experiences with us. Now I'm bringing it to my fellow Uncut producers, Anthony Ivey and Brian Timms, to talk more about the jobs we've hated and the jobs we've loved and how much a good job can actually change the course of your life. My brothers, I want y'all to give the listeners a chance to hear. What was the best job you ever had while incarcerated?
Well, that's easy. For me, it's this job, the Uncuffed job, audio engineering, to be specific. Audio engineering, journalism, and a bunch of other stuff. This was my favorite.
All right, that's right. Stick Talk, how about you?
I would have to for surely say Uncuffed podcast. Like, all my other jobs, they was kind of like, that was both. That was bunk, or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, this job right here is the best job. It kind of changed my life as far as my prison life.
Let's go to the reverse end of the spectrum. Share something with me, Brother Stick, on what's the worst job you ever had in prison.
I would say the worst job I had was a stacker in a milk factory. You'll wake up early in the morning around like 4 o'clock. You would go in there, and it's like a line of crates stacked up, and you got to stack them up high on pallets. And man, I'm telling you, your back really be hurting a lot though.
Oh, you want to hear from me?
Yes, sir.
I mean, almost every job but this. You know, I like my teacher's aid job, but all that other stuff, being a janitor, no. They call it porter. Being a kitchen worker, almost a waiter, no. I mean, all that. Yard crew, no, none of that. All this stuff is awful. It's just awful. You know, sometimes forced to be around people in situations you don't want to be around doing those types of jobs.
Yeah, I could agree with you. I had the job on the yard crew before, and nobody on that yard crew had a pay number except for the lead person. And during that time period, this was in 2002, and that brother that had the job as the lead man, he was only making 13 cents an hour. And nowadays, pretty much over 20 years later, the pay scale is still at that same rate. All right, so what's the highest pay number you personally reached?
I reached 85 cents.
85 cents an hour? All right, and what level of preparation did that skill set give you for dealing with your return to society?
I think that job right there, it actually helped me out because It let me know that I'm gonna be doing work that I might not wanna do.
Now I'll turn it over to Uncuffed producer Ryan Pagan at San Quentin State Prison.
Now we're gonna bring it to my team at San Quentin, Tim Hicks, Steve Brooks, and Anthony Carvalho. I also asked the guys about their experiences with work in prison. And guess what? Not so great. Tim, what's the worst job you ever had?
Working in the kitchen. The kitchen at San Quentin, actually.
Describe that to me, man.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was nasty. It was dirty. Like I was oppressed.
How about you, Steve?
I have to agree. I mean, it wasn't just the kitchen. It was the scullery, where you had to wear these long boots and this long apron, and you had oatmeal all over you at the end of the day. It was horrible.
Man, you know, it was this one boss. It was a CO. For lack of words, I would say he was just very determined to get the job done.
Determined to use you to get the job done.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he was very determined.
How much were you being paid?
That, I think it was like... Like $10 a month.
$10 a month?
Yeah.
So what, 8 cents an hour?
Yeah, like 8 cents an hour, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you owe restitution, right?
Owe restitution, yeah.
So they so take half of that.
Yeah, so I'll be able to buy like an ice cream or something from the store.
Ice cream?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay.
Yeah, that was all. Yeah.
And restitution, which restitution either to the state, which is a fine, or pay to, or victim restitution,
right.
They take half of your money.
Yeah.
So you're really only stuck with like $5. Sometimes there was at one point where it would be $4.50, so 55% they would take. So we can all agree that we've all had some pretty terrible jobs, and we had no choice whether or not we want to do those jobs.
Right.
So as soon as you come into prison, you are given a job, whether you like it or not, and you're forced to work. Otherwise, you would get a rules violation. And no one, especially a lifer, would like to have that on their C file. C file is just another term, central file that every incarcerated person has that keeps a record of all your programming and all the bad things that you have done while incarcerated. So you have to work. And sometimes you only get a measly 8 cents an hour. Sometimes you don't get anything at all.
Right.
And that leaves you with nothing. And if you have no outside support or no family, you are stuck with $4.50, which really can't get you anything in canteen. Because with, you know, inflation, the price of all the food that's being sold to us inside a prison has gone up, while the wages have been stagnant for the last 30 years. Minimum wage in California is $15 an hour. So why are we only getting paid 8 cents an hour for some of these jobs that we do? Sometimes we don't even get paid at all.
Yeah.
So why is that, Steve?
Well, I guess it's this concept of the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Under that amendment, slavery and involuntary servitude has been abolished except for people who commit crimes, and it can be used as punishment, basically, when you go to prison. And so the concept of it came from an old idea where if you commit an offense against somebody, you have to pay that off with your labor. And so they created like these debtors' prisons, and those debtors' prisons evolved into these plantation prisons where people had to actually work in the fields, picking cotton or doing whatever they had to do to work off their debt in order to go back to society. And so that's carried over into the current system that we see in America where when you go to prison, it's expected that your labor is a part of your punishment.
You know, there are those that are in our society that are thinking to themselves, who cares if convicted criminals get paid for their work? They're getting punished.
You know, when I took my deal and I knew the restitution was there, I was burdened with the restitution, not my family. You know, and for them to participate in our rehabilitation and send in money, whether it's for canteen, even for our phone calls, when they send in money to put on the books so you can text them and use video conferencing and all that, 55% goes to restitution. And you know, it sounds tragic, but it was cute. My wife never got the math that when she sent in $100, I'd call her back and said, I need, you know, I only got 45. And she didn't get all that. And a lot of families don't, because the indentured servitude, in my opinion, has been elongated to include restitution, that our family now becomes part of the debtor prison as well.
Yeah. And you bring up a valid point, this being a debtor's prison. And let's think about it for a second. Majority of people that are incarcerated are poor. That's a fact. So you're basically telling us that not only do we have to pay this restitution, that I don't mind paying it, mm-hmm. but you're subjecting my family into this debt.
Paying restitution should not be a problem, but the problem of that is having to have your family pay it, like Anthony's wife, for instance, or our family, who have, when they send us money trying to help us out, you know, and the restitution basically goes to the crime that we committed. You know, it goes to either the family or to the
court costs
or, mm-hmm. or something, you know. So that's just our way of being able to pay the, yeah. our debt to society. So,
and the restitution, the amount ranges, right? I know for me, they gave me a $10,000 restitution.
Yeah, mine too, right?
Yeah.
And was it a victim restitution, or was it a punishment?
It's victim's restitution.
So I have a victim's restitution, which is $10,000, and then I have a court restitution, which is $2,000. So I have an additional $2,000 on top of the $10,000. For those that don't care for us getting paid, I would challenge them into thinking that, number one, we're trying to pay off the restitutions and the fines that are given to us, right? And number two, you're incentivizing work, and you're giving these guys, you know, job skills, hopefully, and giving a lot of incarcerated men the ability to save their money after the restitution is paid, because we only get $200 when we parole. You get $200 gate money, and then you're off, and you're expected to not come back inside of prison. But that's nothing, especially with the cost of living out there. Like, what do you expect me to do with $200?
People want to work. Human beings want to work. People in here want to work. They just don't want to be exploited. And so that's the difference. It's like, when people in society hear that we don't want to work, they take it like, oh, they should work. If I got to work, you should work. That's what people in society are thinking. If I got to work, why you don't have to work? You know, that's not the point. The point is that when we labor, that labor is not going to cut costs like restitution, or help us pay for the essentials that we need, or help us create some type of future monies to help us when we get out. And so when you talk about labor, there's so many different things that go into that concept. It's not that we don't want to work. It is how you are taking advantage of this idea of human labor. That's mm-hmm. what the real issue is, you know, when it comes to involuntary servitude. And people don't see that. You know, it was something that started originally, and it's been bastardized, in my opinion, because it started, you just paying off a debt. It's like working on the side of the freeway. I'm going to clean up all this trash to work off my debt. But when you get a life sentence, and you get a $5,000 restitution fine, it's like, well, wait a minute. You just gave a man a life sentence. So now what is the restitution for? Oh, that's for punishment. Well, ain't the life sentence for punishment? So it's like the question becomes, well, wait a minute. What is the real punishment here? You know, so it's like you have taken something that used to be about this, and you've transformed it into something completely different. And now you got people spending the rest of their life in prison paying restitution at 55% of whatever they make off an 8-cent-an-hour job, and they can't afford the basic essentials inside of that prison.
Let's just put the writing on the wall, right? We all know that it's all about slavery, keeping people yes. in bondage.
Yes.
You know, when they abolished slavery, they had to make a way to where they could still enslave people and keep their foot on people's neck. When I say they, I'm talking about old slave drivers, you know, and people who had that control back then in those days. But we all know they had to make a way to keep people in bondage. And the only way to do so is to put people in prison and make them pay, you know, by working them like slaves. You can look at it differently, or people can look at it in a different way. But when you look at the writing on the wall, that's what I see.
Well, you got lawmakers in California saying that involuntary servitude is really a part of your rehabilitation. It's to make you a better person.
Hmm.
So we're going to pay you 8 cents an hour to make you a better person.
Yeah, okay.
And the sad fact of the matter, the wages do not even stay in line with the interest that's accruing on your restitution. So it's going to keep getting bigger and bigger as we're making honest attempts to stand up and take our accountability.
To bring up your point, Tim, about the slave driver, right? That's a controversial term, but I have to agree with you. There are certain states that contract incarcerated labor to companies.
Yeah.
And these companies use incarcerated labor, they exploit incarcerated labor, and they sell their products. And I know, there was like a big firestorm with Victoria's Secret and a few other companies. Yeah, I'm name dropping. I don't care. There's been a few companies that have been exposed because of that. Mm-hmm. And so to bring up your point, Steve, that there are lawmakers that are still trying to gain from incarcerated labor. Because how can you say that me getting paid 8 cents an hour, not paying off my restitution or not taking care of myself, right? Which is the responsible thing to do rather than rely on your family. How can you say that that's for my rehabilitation? That doesn't make any sense to me.
The whole idea is for us to be rehabilitated and go back to society, be better people that can actually survive in society. But right now, what you see in California is you see that 7 out of 10 people who are homeless were formerly incarcerated. You have people going back to society, oh, no, I can't hire you because you were in prison, so I can't give you a job. I can't rent you an apartment or in a house because you were in prison, because you have a felony or whatever. So when you go back to society, you have a disadvantage in the things that are available to you. But yet you're spending all these years in prison using your labor, and that labor is not being used to help prepare you for the society you're going back to. That's the biggest problem. And not just that, but when you're in prison, you got to buy soap, you got to buy toothpaste, you got to buy deodorant, hair grease if you got hair. There's just so many things that you got to do to help
yourself.
You
smiled at me right now.
I smiled at you because I know your hair grease is expensive.
It costs a lot. costs a lot.
And so that's the point. It's like you have to make sure that you take care of your bare necessities, because the state is going to give you some tooth powder that you probably going to damn near choke to death on. It's like you can't use that stuff. You get one roll. Well, now we're under the new California model now, but previously we only got one roll of toilet paper. Make that last a week.
Now it's abundant.
Now
they did that, giving away. They're throwing it out.
Yeah. It's abundant now. And so it's like everything you need to take care of yourself and build your self-esteem as a human being. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you walking around the prison with your breath stinking, funky, and all this other stuff, you're going to feel pretty horrible as a human. Well, you should feel pretty horrible as a human being.
You should.
So it should be about building people's self-esteem, building people's confidence, building the things that they need in order to be better people in society. And that's not what this looks like. So when you talk about my labor being a rehabilitative tool, all it is a tool that's breaking me down and making it where I'm just going to get beat up. Like you said, you got burned up in the kitchen. I got burned up in the kitchen. I got all kind of burns on my body that nobody's going to compensate me for. And over the years, we just do job after job after job, not building no social security net, not building up anything that we can take back to society with us to say, here's something that you can use to make sure you don't come back to prison.
Yeah. We have to reshape the way society views the incarcerated. Not looking at us as a tax burden, but rather look at us as an investment. You're investing in human beings in order for them to be better, productive citizens upon release. By giving incarcerated people a decent wage, right? Giving them education, giving them rehabilitative programs, you're basically investing in a person.
Yeah. When you come in the system, hypothetically, you come in as a broken person. So when you go out of the system, you should be able to go out as a whole person. You shouldn't have to go out as a broken person. That's the whole concept, because 95% of the people in prison are going to come back to society.
All right, we'll leave it there, guys. Investing in human beings.
That excerpt from the Uncuffed podcast was made by the crew at Solano State Prison, Jay Evans, Anthony Ivey, B.F. Thames, and Brian Mazza, and at San Quentin State Prison, Ryan Pagan, Steve Brooks, Tim Hicks, Anthony Carvalho, Greg Eskridge, Juan Haynes, and Brian Acey. The team also includes Eric Abercrombie, Nina Gensler-Debs, Sonia Paul, Kathy Novak, and Angela Johnston. Special thanks to Audio Academy fellows Lina Nagia-Basuni and Alistair Boone for fact-checking the episode. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation and listeners like you. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. You can hear more by subscribing to Uncuffed on your podcast player. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow morning at 11. We'll hear about the work to revive one of Oakland's most iconic nightclubs.
Miss Esther walked by, and then the bass started playing. And then she said, "Whoo, that's walking down 7th Street, huh?" She done like that.
The story of Esther's Orbit Room, tomorrow morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sandra Halliday, Alistair Boone, James Rowlands, Gannady Joe Johnson, Victor Tenz, Shireen Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Sunni Khalid, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.